Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, former NBA star Lamar Odom fighting for his life after being found unconscious in a Nevada brothel. Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. joins us. He spent time yesterday at Odom's bedside. He will give us an update on his condition. Journalist Joy Ann Reed breaks down how the topic of race affects presidential campaigns. Also, he's known as Beyonce's father, but Matthew Knowles knows how to build superstars and has a new book called The DNA of Achievers. Plus, it's What the Hell Thursday. You know, we've got some unbelievable, wild stories, like why one woman is suing her nephew for a hug. What is she thinking? It's time to bring the funk on News One Now, right now. Former NBA star Lamar Odom is fighting for his life in a Nevada hospital. The 35-year-old was found unresponsive Tuesday night at the Love Ranch brothel near Las Vegas. It is unclear exactly what happened, but the brothel's owner says Odom was taking what he called herbal Viagra.
The girl said that they didn't see anything. The police came out with the ambulance people. They didn't see anything. The only thing we know for sure is he was taking an excessive amount of herbal Viagra. Now, not to say that he wasn't doing any drugs, but nobody saw anything like that, and they saw no effects.
The last really big thing was when him and his ex-wife was texting each other about seeing each other, resolving things, and then when he finally got out there, TMZ, it was really bad. It was not good. It was bad. He gets a lot of calls and texts, so I don't know if that could have put him over the edge, but we know that something's not right.
Lamar Odom, of course, was a star at UCLA, and he won championships with the Los Angeles Lakers as certainly one of the key players there, along with Kobe Bryant, leading them to various titles. Off the court, though, was a different story. He married reality TV star Khloe Kardashian in 2009, but they broke up in 2013. The divorce was finalized last year. Since then, he had several run-ins with the law for drunk driving and also drug use. When he was traded to the Dallas Mavericks, that didn't end too well, and so his career was stopped as a result of drug use. Also, it's been some issues because recently he had two friends who died of drug overdoses as well. NBA star Chris Paul offered his well wishes at a news conference yesterday.
I just wanted to extend love and support to one of our NBA brothers, Lamar Odom. We love you, man. Keep fighting.
Of course, Miami Heat star Dwayne Wade tweeted, quote, I pray this morning for my dear brother. Dear God, he's one of the good ones. Please watch over him and listen to his heart speak. Hashtag prayers for Lamar. Shaquille O'Neal, who was a teammate of Odom's with the Lakers, said, quote, everyone that reads this post, please pray for my friend Lamar Odom that he makes a full recovery. Hashtag my heart hurts. Yesterday, Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., who was in Las Vegas for the Democratic debate that took place on Tuesday, went to the hospital to visit Lamar Odom, who's at his bedside, and he prayed with him as well. He joins us via phone right now. Also, we have on Skype from New York psychologist Dr. Jeffrey Gardier. Want to go to Reverend Jackson first. Reverend Jackson, you were at his bedside. You prayed with Lamar Odom. We've seen all these reports that he is in a coma. He's unresponsive. What can you tell us?
He is a very sick man. I do not know any of what happened. I know that Kobe visited him night before last. I think he left the game early to visit him. That was a good thing. Khloe was there by his side and two of his friends. And we had prayer, prayed to God to spare him. But let his will be done. He's had a tough struggle for a long time, Lamar has. Now he's in the fight for his life. So let's pray for him. We fall down, we get back up again, but it's God's mercy and grace that we lean on now.
Reverend, you talked about, how bad it is. And again, this is someone who has had some serious issues over the last several years. We've talked more about his drug use as opposed to his athletic prowess, of course, playing with the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Dallas Mavericks. And the reality is drug addiction is no joke. It is a serious, serious issue that affects so many families, whether you're a superstar or not.
Well, what struck me is that some of his friends, who no doubt would be very curious now, knew about it, and that offered him the support he needed. Questions when your friend is inclined toward drug use, are you an assist player? Are you blocking him from it? Those who knew it probably did very little about it. And that concerned me. Am I my brother's keeper? No, you're brother's brother. And that is the moral obligation to help those who are struggling. And your friend has been struggling, Roland, for a long time.
Reverend, how long have you known Odom and his family?
Over 15 years, really. Since he first got together, I remember he's kind of a fan. You know, we had good people off the court.
So Reverend,
needs my prayers, Roland.
Obviously, so you're returning back from Chicago, I understand you said that he's surrounded by his family as well. What did they want the public to know?
Well, they're simply just sort of holding on, hoping that he was completely non-responsive when they first found him. There was some organ movement on yesterday. But he is given. It's watch and wait at this point. It's just watch and wait and pray.
Okay, Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much for joining us on News One Now. I want to go to Jeffrey Gardier right now. Jeffrey, I talked about this. And again, we don't know specifically what caused Lamar Odom to be found unconscious there in a brothel in Las Vegas, near Las Vegas. But we do know that he has had this history. And I talked about that in the open recently, in the past year, having two friends who died of drug overdoses. Two very close friends, that has to have a serious impact on somebody who is fighting addiction.
It absolutely does, because it kind of lowers the bar, if you will, where you say, well, if this could happen to my friends, then it could probably happen to me too. It's almost like someone leading by the wrong example. It becomes a reality that was not there before.
I know some people are saying, okay, here's an athlete. Yes, he was married to a reality star. What's the big deal? But the reality is this here. There are families out there who are fighting this every single day. There are families out there who are fighting family members with mental illness. There was a gentleman, Thomas Johnson, who was a budding star wide receiver at Texas A&M, who abruptly left the team 3 years ago. After the Alabama game, which he starred in, and just a few days ago, admitted to just hacking to death a jogger in Dallas for no reason at all. And the family talked about all the troubles. And so there are families who are having to contend with family members with drug problems, with mental problems. How do we get someone to recognize they need help to not put themselves in this position?
Well, Roland, you're absolutely right. And I think what you're alluding to is the fact that drug addiction is nothing more than a self-medication for emotional pain and quite often mental illness, for depression. And that's what we know that Lamar Odom was going through for a very long time. He said that he felt that the media had criticized and had destroyed him and that he virtually had nothing to live for. So I think in some ways what happened at that Nevada ranch Bravo was a form of suicide. He went in and he was not coming out. I think the point where you know that you need help is where it's not getting better, where you start turning to drugs, which is perhaps the red flag right there that you need that. where you're not able to talk to anyone, where the pain is so overwhelming that you will start doing destructive things to yourself, such as taking cocaine or taking heroin or using alcohol. That is the sign that certainly you need to get some therapeutic care instead of hurting yourself even further with the drug and or alcohol abuse.
Well, again, when someone collapses in a brothel, I mean, the bottom line is it's not like it happened at home. So that right there by itself, yes, it's legal in Nevada, but the reality is that says a whole lot by itself.
It certainly does, that you would take such an extreme action and put yourself in a position for self-harm. Let's be clear that there are cross addictions here. Perhaps there was some alcohol going on, not totally sure of that, but certainly what we're hearing is possibly there was cocaine, taking sexual enhancing drugs, whether they be natural or pharmaceutical, but even the sex itself becomes some sort of an addiction. It becomes a self-medicating. So in other words, he was using all sorts of different types of drugs, sex being one of those drugs. He just wanted to forget. He had nothing left to live for in his mind. This is what we know that he had said at some point a few weeks before, and he was on a mission to just completely destroy himself, and perhaps he almost completed that act.
I want to bring in our panel right now. Mo Ivory, WHUR's 96.3 radio host, Paris Tenard, GOP strategist, Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver, leadership strategist for the Exceptional Leadership Institute for Women. I want to ask all of you, the other piece is this here. And Jeff, just hold on 1 second. When you start talking about reality television, it's very interesting. We can go down the line, the people who have been impacted by reality television. I remember when this reality show started, when he hooked up with Khloe Kardashian, and then when he got traded for the Lakers or the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, it didn't work out because he was spiraling out of control even while playing in the NBA. And we've seen other folks impacted by reality television who go to prison, who've gotten in trouble. It's amazing how that spotlight, even though this is a guy who was in the NBA playing in Los Angeles, how even that reality show spotlight took it to a whole different level in his life.
No, absolutely. Roland, I think that you could, like you said, countless number of reality stars' life begin to spiral out of control once they were on the reality show. Actually, the reality show isn't the reality. This is the reality. And the reality that begins to happen to all these people when they're, you know, they mess up the relationships with their family, they have nobody to support them, their marriages end. And, you know, it's unfortunate that people aren't learning that this exposure is so negative and it spirals out of control to this. But I definitely think that Lamar had other issues besides just the exposure that he had on the reality show. And it's just a very, very sad situation.
I agree too, Roland. But one point, we'll go back to what Dr. Jeff was saying. I think it's important for us not to rush to judgment.
That it was a suicide.
Was a suicide. We don't know that. We don't know all the facts. Until we have all the facts, I think we should be careful how we talk about this situation. But to your point, Roland, about the reality show, it's important to realize it wasn't the reality show that made him a drug addict.
That's exactly
this right. issue, these issues that he had were before the reality show, but it just heightened the situation.
But that's my point. My point is, again, it's not just him. We can go through countless folks.
Sure.
When that is a different type of spotlight.
Oh, it is. And even the Kardashians. The Kardashians take it to a whole nother level.
Exactly.
And I think if you're going to be on a reality show, if we were to sum up probably the most unhealthy reality show besides, you know, ones I can name, are the Kardashians. Look at all the people around them, the brother. You know, many people in that clan have come out with some serious issues.
Exactly. That's exactly the point that I was going to make. And being with a Kardashian takes it to a whole nother level. That's a whole other version of scrutiny. I mean, every day you're hearing something or seeing something having to do with that family. And so that level of scrutiny puts a whole level, different level of pressure on someone who is already clearly dealing with issues prior to entering that relationship.
Well, the Kardashians are right.
I want to go back to Jeff for a second here. Jeff, I didn't get the sense that you were saying this was a suicide. The sense that I got, Jeff, was that saying, look, when you're going to a brothel, when you have reports reports of folks saying was using cocaine and then taking herbal Viagra and then previously issues of heroin and two other friends dying of drug overdose. That when you're sort of stuck in that vortex, I think about Philip Seymour Hoffman, same way, that you are playing with death when you are just simply saying to your life, I'm just gonna be out of control.
Absolutely. When you play with fire, you certainly can get burned. I was not saying that he was tried to commit suicide. What I'm saying is his actions were suicidal, putting himself at risk in that way. By the way, we see that with many young men in the inner city being involved in very dangerous situations, a lot of risk taking, and that was severe risk taking. When you don't care about yourself any longer, then you do things that can potentially hurt you because you're trying to self-medicate or forget about the hurt you're feeling now. You become numb. And I just want to say one more thing. When it comes to these issues of the reality show, certainly we've seen some major problems out there. But I've got to tell you, as you know, I've worked extensively in reality. I worked on the Housewives of Atlanta and other reality shows. And one of the things I've done is to make it my mission to help people have their breakthroughs, to look at the issues that they've had before they've gone on the shows, how perhaps they've expressed those issues and help them to heal. So there is a place for that. I really don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. But again, with Lamar Odom, I think it's very important that we give him compassion, that we give him love at this point, and that we pray for him, because this is a man who was and is in extreme emotional and now physical pain.
As well as 35 years old, Jeffrey Gardier. Dr. Jeffrey Gardier, I certainly appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure.
All right, folks, coming up, headlines including Pittsburgh Steelers player D'Angelo Williams fighting to wear pink on the field. Also, journalist Joanne Reed and I compare notes about how race relations continues to trip up electoral candidates, even black ones. Plus, music mogul Matthew Knowles, you know him as Beyonce's dad, also her manager, and for a long time breaks down the secrets to success. Folks, 16 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, a medical student says he was barred from using a restaurant's bathroom because he's black. 28-year-old Kim O'Hagelbaum was celebrating the completion of a school project with friends at the Landmark Tavern in New York City. Despite patronizing the bar for 45 minutes, the night manager refused to let him use the bathroom, saying only paid customers could use the facilities. However, his two Asian friends were permitted to go in with no problem. After arguing with the manager, O'Hagelbaum was given a summons for disorderly conduct for making, quote, unreasonable noise. The medical student plans to file a lawsuit against the tavern. Now, is it now? Lord, Paris, is it like, you know, now what? Going to the bathroom while black? I mean, right. Jesus.
You know, Roland, it's a problem that we keep seeing over and over again. And I think we need to, as a community, hold these establishments accountable and saying, we're not going to take it. We're not going to patronize you. We're not going to let you apply the stereotype on black young men that says that you are unruly or that you can't behave yourself or that somehow you can't even be a patron in the restaurant when you are and you can't even utilize the facilities. But it's enough is enough.
Because here's the deal. If I've been spending my money, can't use the bathroom, yeah, it's going to be some unreasonable noise.
Yeah. Well, what I'm concerned about is the officer that then shows up and even moves forward in some legal, the summons and taking him in for an infraction like that. When I'm sure the Asian friends were saying, he was with us, he paid at the bar, he's been here. But to make that kind of a thing, using the bathroom, a cause to give a young man who's in school, trying to get his education, do the right thing, a summons, and now he has to deal with all that. It's just absolute discrimination.
It's just crazy. All right, folks, Jared Adams spent 9 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. At the age of 17, he and two friends were falsely accused of sexual assault and sentenced to 28 years. He was released after submitting letters to the Wisconsin Innocence Project just in time for a federal appeal. He was exonerated. While in prison, Adams studied law. He recently graduated from Loyola University in Chicago with a law degree and is now working as a clerk at the same court that granted him his freedom. Avis, we see these kinds of stories, and you can't get those years back.
No. No.
And again, here's the deal. The reality is it's rare. We see them, but it's rare when you see these stories of folks who've been exonerated that they're white. Typically, it's an African-American who is caught in a situation.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder how many people are in prison right now that shouldn't be there. There is no amount of money that you can give this person to give him back the 17 years of freedom that he missed. Wonderful that he's been able to push through and persevere and has been able to not only get himself free but have a law degree and move on with his life, but how much talent, how much brains, how much human capital, quite frankly, is wasting away in prison today that we could use right now, not only for their own lives but for the betterment of the entire nation.
Mo, I know you're a lawyer, and one of the things that people don't realize is, and unfortunately it's a reality, you have folks who simply can't afford lawyers, who can't afford counsel. They have to rely on these individuals who are, frankly, defending people, but they don't have many resources, and a lot of people are forced into taking plea bargains, into admitting guilt to things when they didn't do it just to be able to get out of the system.
That is so prevalent in the law and in sentencing, Roland, and that is another problem that we have to tackle in the justice system is the constant pressure on defendants to take plea deals even though they know they never did anything because there's just not enough resources to try their cases, to have the have the attorney feel that they could win the case. And it's very, very sad, but I want to say for this gentleman, I think that he has an amazing amount of tenacity to not be angry about his situation, to be able to then want to go into the very field that put him in jail and then to come out and work for the judge, you know, that signed his papers. I just think he's an amazing guy. And I wish there were more stories like this about people that re-entered into society and were able to be successful at it.
After 47 years in law enforcement and 8 years as Philadelphia Police Commissioner, Charles Ramsey is retiring effective January 7th. He stepped into the national spotlight last year when President Barack Obama appointed him chair of a national task force designed to strengthen police and community relations. In an official statement about Ramsey's retirement, President Obama said, quote, "For several months earlier this year, he played a vital role in bringing together leaders from across the country to create a clear and concise report, including key recommendations for building stronger trust between communities and the law enforcement agencies that protect them." Certainly, so again, he also was a longtime police chief in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right.
All right, folks, this week a portrait of State Senator and Reverend Clementa Pinckney has been hung in the Charleston Place Hotel in South Carolina. He was one of the nine slain at the Emmanuel AME Church by Dylan Roof in June. His wife and daughter were in attendance during the ceremony. Mickey Bax, general manager of the hotel, who has continued to do all he can to support the victims' families, helped put the picture on the wall. Pinckney served as a representative in the South Carolina Senate from the 45th District for the past 14 years and was pastor of Emmanuel AME for the past 5 years. Folks, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and Pittsburgh Steelers player D'Angelo Williams is trading in his black and gold for shades of pink. The running back wanted to wear pink the entire season to honor his mother and four of his aunts who died from breast cancer. The NFL told him, though, he could only wear pink during the month of October, so he dyed the tips of his hair pink. Williams has also offered to pay for 53 women to get mammograms at Charlotte, North Carolina, and Pittsburgh hospitals. He used to play in North Carolina. 53, of course, his mother died at the age of 53 when she lost her life to the disease. You know what, Paris, this is stupid to me, okay, for the NFL, okay, seriously. So you're spending all of October celebrating Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you're telling him no, but it's no different. Craig Ironhead Hayward, his son, and that plays for the Steelers, he wore these sort of black tags under his eyes which said Ironhead, honoring his dad, a former NFL player. He got fined for wearing those as well. At some point, the NFL sounds pretty stupid.
You're right, Roland. The NFL needs all the positive press and PR it can get, especially yeah. as it relates to
yes.
women.
Absolutely.
And so to come on the wrong side of something that universally
right.
so
that
important,
is
like
so true.
Honoring his mother and
so
then
true.
Honoring more women to say no and try to have fines and all this stuff, it's just a dumb thing to do. Oh. But kudos to him for sticking up for what he believes in and for his mother. But the NFL needs to be on the right side of history and just get with the program. It's just insane.
Yeah. Makes you wonder who the heck is over PR.
I know. And
oh my
women,
God.
I also want to know where the women are in the NFL that are sitting
hire.
At the table not speaking up about this kind of thing, because I think what you just said makes so much sense that anybody would then say, oh, you know what, just let him do it and honor his mother for as long as he wants to.
Right.
I don't
yeah.
get it.
But you know, but it's, yeah, you trust me, after their issues for the past couple of years, you would think they would say, dude, please wear it all
right.
year.
Right,
no,
yes.
For the rest of your career. That's
correct.
Fine. Last headlines on the heels of winning an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave and the success of his ABC drama American Crime, John Ridley is set to start a new project. The Oscar winner will direct the Rodney King L.A. Riots film for Broad, Green, and Imagine Entertainment. The film will depict the riots that ensued in the spring of 1992 following the acquittal of four LAPD cops who brutally beat Rodney King. The principal photography for the movie will begin next spring. All right, folks, when we come back, journalist Joanne Reed and I talk about her new book, Fractured, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide. Later, Beyonce's father's in the house. Matthew Knowles breaks down the most important traits of highly successful people in his new book, The DNA of Achievers. Plus, man goes the extra mile for a can of beer. You know what that means? It's What the Hell Thursday. For the latest news, go to news1.com. Folks, 27 after the hour. News 1 now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Joanne Reed's new book, Fracture, Barack Obama, the Clintons, and the Racial Divide, takes a look at how race relations have shaped American politics over the last 50 years. I recently sat down with her to discuss why national campaigns need to work harder to get the black vote, as well as including black campaign strategists.
Having worked on a couple of national campaigns, that always is an issue, that the party shows up 6 weeks out with get out the vote money. They put canvassers in the neighborhood, but they don't put any ads on black radio.
Freeze us out of top positions as
right.
well, hiring the same sort of people.
Yeah.
And then when these people go up the chain, they become
right.
campaign manager and campaign chair.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, we sort of get, yeah, you'll be the policy person for black folks.
Yeah, and there was a point even in the Obama campaign when Valerie Jarrett had to go to South Carolina because there were questions among the black staff about even access, whether or not there was going to be enough access for the candidate within black neighborhoods, whether they're going to send him enough.
Oh, and that was
black
real.
Community. Yeah.
No. I mean, I can recall, let's just say I can recall having private meetings with folks.
Yeah.
And that was a serious divide in that campaign.
Absolutely.
Among his white advisors and among folks like Valerie Jarrett, Candace Tolliver Burns,
right.
Michael Strautmanis, and others.
Yeah.
And it existed. And that yep. was, and here you got a black candidate.
Exactly. And you had in South Carolina, you know, the Rick Wade program was all about getting the candidate into the barbershops, into the community. But there was this question among the larger parts of his campaign of not wanting to run him as a specifically black candidate and wanting to do what they did with Harold Washington in the reelect in Chicago, which is to try to get beyond him just being African American. There was this question of how much to talk about race. Of course, he had to talk about it, especially when his opponents dug up the Jeremiah Wright tapes, and suddenly he was racialized and had to deal with it and give a big speech. But yeah, I think on Democratic campaigns, just getting away from just the Barack Obama campaign, mm-hmm. this is an every 4 year conversation. How much money is going to get spent on black media? How much concern do you have for the issues of black folk before 6 weeks out? Are you just doing GOTV? And one of the things that I do write about is that after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act are passed, even Lyndon Johnson had this sense of inheritance. And we have now inherited black loyalty, and that there's really not much more we need to do to get it. We have it. It is ours. And that presumption of black loyalty oh. has been the case since then in the Democratic Party.
And the problem is when you have Republicans who will not talk to black people,
right.
you're pretty much leaving black folks with no option but to be highly critical, to sort of force these candidates' hand. And this is what I'm trying to get people to understand. I mean, this is what Juan Williams has no clue about when he's criticizing Black Lives Matter for challenging Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and
That's
Martin
right.
O'Malley.
Yeah.
These are folks who have grown up and they watched their parents, that black establishment, go, what the hell does y'all really get
right.
for all of this black loyalty? No. We're going to demand some stuff early on
That's
in
right.
the game and not after you've already secured the nomination and now it's trying to say, okay, how can we get y'all votes in the last 6 weeks?
Yeah, and keep in mind that not Postcard King, but actual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. challenged the sitting president of the United States a year before his reelect in 1967, going directly at the president who'd signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act on the Vietnam War. You've had black activists and black civil rights leaders always challenge the party in which most black folk find themselves, because you have to challenge power while you have currency. And when do you have currency? Before an election. Always been the case.
Look, I can't even tell you the absolute dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life was when the Obama administration changed the regulations regarding the Parent PLUS loan.
Yeah.
And the UNCF, the HBCU presidents, they decided in August of 2012, we're not going to say anything because we don't want to jeopardize the president's re-election. And I was at a meeting during Essence Fest, and it was with Michael Lomax, it was with the presidents of Spelman, Morehouse, the president of Clark Atlanta, and I literally told them that was the dumbest thing in the world y'all can do. I said, who the hell waits after the election?
Right.
I said, your leverage was before the election.
Right.
And it was 3 years them fighting, trying to somehow get the whole thing changed. It was unbelievable.
Well, I mean, if you think about the successful recent movements, the LGBT community went right after the Democrats, right before the 2010 midterms. They fought the Democrats really
with hell checks.
That's right.
And December 2010, what did Obama do?
They went ahead and did Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You
right.
saw the administration literally have to become more aggressive. You look at the Dreamers. They get criticized mercilessly for constantly hammering Democrats rather than Republicans. Well, if you think about it, you know, 65% to 70% of Latinos at this stage are Democrats. And so they're challenging the party that's sitting and saying, if you want us in 2014, if you want us to turn out in 2012, you're going to have to come to the table.
But
and
the
you
crazy
know what?
Thing is
the administration
they,
did.
But the crazy thing is they're using a black playbook.
Yes. And this is the tried and true playbook.
That's what's
of the
killing me.
Movement. Absolutely.
Latinos and gays using a black playbook.
Right.
But black folks have been unwilling to use our own playbook with President Obama sitting in the White House.
I think there's been
Democrats.
A restraint in part because African Americans have watched the way this president was treated. One of the things that I assumed would happen if you had a black president is that you would have a backlash. To some extent, we'd find out really who we are racially in this country. And we certainly have found out that there is still a lot of animus on a racial level, and the president received a lot of it. And I think African Americans had a mix of pride in this president, wanted to protect the president. Even members of the CBC will tell you off the record, they didn't want to go too far because they didn't want to feed into what the opponents of the president were doing unfairly to him. And so you had a restraint on the part of African Americans.
The problem is that hurt black folks.
Yeah, and what?
I mean every other group, and I get it, every other group, though, understands that that you got to get what you can get
right.
while you can get it.
Right.
I mean, LGBT folks presented him a 54-page agenda in his first 60 days.
Yeah. Yeah,
it took black folks. They met Sharpton, Morial, the NAACP, and Melanie Campbell. It took them 6 years to have a meeting to come up with a black agenda. And I'm going, 60 days, 54 pages.
But I think it's also a matter of the nature of the critique. There's been a lot of blowback to the Cornel West, Tavis Smiley wing of the critique against Barack Obama because it is personal. And I think a lot of the critique, it has to be policy-based. And
oh,
I think
absolutely.
When it becomes personal, it becomes an ineffective critique. And that's been part of the problem is that no matter whether you're talking about Republicans or people like West and Smiley, the critiques against the president are so personal. And whether it comes from the right, where they're talking about his birth certificate, wait a minute, let's talk about policy. It becomes so personal that I think it just becomes noise.
More of my conversation with Joanne Reed tomorrow. All right, folks, coming up, Beyonce's dad, Matthew Knowles, joins us next with his book, The DNA of Achievers. Plus, we've got this week's crazy stories in What the Hell Thursday. We'll be back on News 1 Now TV 1 in a moment.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
Grammy Award-winning executive producer Matthew Knowles, who also happens to be Beyoncé's dad, is known for helping artists like Destiny's Child reach one milestone after another. Now he has a book out, his Amazon number one bestseller, The DNA of Achievers, 10 Traits of Highly Successful Professionals. Matthew, what's up, man?
Roland, good morning. You know, Roland, I flew all the way from Houston, our hometown, to New York, and I get on a plane last night to come and see you here in D.C., and you're in New York.
Well, a highly successful achiever named Oprah Winfrey asked me to come to New York to see the documentary Belief. And so when Oprah asked you to come somewhere, you kind of got to just go ahead and show up.
I think you're right. How about you right on that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So let me ask you this here. So this idea of, so why did you want to write this book to examine the DNA of achievers?
Well, Roland, it was the next step for me. You know, I've taught for 10 years, 8 years there at Texas Southern University in Houston. And so when I travel a whole lot, and I'm on the planes from here to there, and I talk to my neighbor on the flight. And everybody, when they talk about what they do, you see this excitement, this passion, and they tell me the same thing over and over. And I thought about some of my friends, and you know I have 30 really good friends that talk in this book, and they all show and exhibit these same traits. And so I thought it's time to write about these key traits, the DNA of achievers.
And so one of those things is obviously focus is a huge, huge issue. But what's the one that really stands out that connects just different people?
No, the most important one is passion. You know, that's the thing that excites us, that gives us that fire. The thing we go to bed at night and wake up in the morning, can't wait to do. And that passion fuels the work ethics. They coexist. You can't have one without the other. So for me, it's passion. That's what it is. And my passion today is to educate and to motivate in the areas of entrepreneurship and entertainment.
Well, you've got some folks there on the panel. I know that they have a question. So Mo Avis in Paris, what you got?
Mr. Knowles, it seems to me that most everyone has a passion, but I think the difference between those who achieve and those who don't is that a lot of people are afraid to pursue their passion. Mm. And so they sort of back off and they get satisfied with what they have because they're afraid to go for it. What sort of nitbit or touch can you give someone to say, you know, why don't you just take that chance?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and that's why in this book, The DNA of Achievers, we actually give at the end of the chapter, it's a workbook. And you can actually work through the questions you just asked. You know, most people, they dream. We still dream, regardless of what age you are. It's just a matter of taking that next step. You know, sometimes we're concerned about what others are going to say. Oh, that's not going to work. Why are they doing that? But that's the visionary in each and every one of us. And we have to feel that fire and do that thing that we really love. And I guarantee you, if you live a life of passion, you'll never work a day in your life.
Do you think that you're born with a sense to be an achiever, or do you think you can learn those traits as you go through your life?
I think it's both. I look at Beyonce and Solange, and they lived in an entrepreneurial environment. I grew up in Gaston, Alabama. Now, although my parents were extremely poor, I lived in an entrepreneurial environment. So it can be both. I think it can be your environment that you grew up in or where you are today in your life. And I think it can be learned. It's traits that can be learned.
Mm. How important is work ethic? And can, you know, I look at Joe Jackson, how he worked with his children, how you worked with your daughters, and that work ethic, which people still have.
Oh, yeah.
How critical is that?
You put Matthew with Joe Jackson?
Successful children.
Thank you, Roland. Thank you, Roland. Thank you, Roland.
Success story.
Where's my belt?
I was thinking, what is wrong with this boy?
It's all good.
I have to say, Joe had his way of discipline and his way of reaching his kid. You know, mine is different. I wanted empower. I just wanted to surround my kids with whatever it is that they were passionate about and to give them the tools so that they can understand, do I really, really love this or is this something else? And that's the role of a parent. I always say, if my kids had said, hey, Dad, I want to be a doctor, then I would have said, you know what? That's great. Go to medical school. When you finish, I would have bought a hospital.
Oh.
That's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Very sweet. That's awesome.
So, all right then. So, first of all, Matthew, final question, and that is, there's somebody who's watching. They're not a child, but they are in their 40s. They're in their 50s, and they really are sick and tired of where they're working. Mm-hmm. Then they want to do something different. What do you tell them in 30 seconds?
I tell you, it's a transition. Don't make a bold step and quit your job today. Transition to whatever that passion is. Be smart about it, be strategic about it, and go for it. 100%. Go for it.
All right, folks, the book by Matthew Knowles is called The DNA of Achievers. Show the book cover, please. That's right, 10 Traits of Highly Successful Professionals. Matthew, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a bunch.
Hey, I'll see you in Houston.
See you in Houston, and also Alphas will always teach you Omegas.
Okay, a little something, something. There we go. Omegas are three.
Ooh, six. All right, coming up, find out what one woman did to earn the title Worst Aunt Ever. And What the Hell Thursday up next. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Singer Keisha Cole turns 34 years old today. Genuine turns 45. And my homeboy Eric Benet turns 49. Plus singer Tito Jackson turns 62 on this day in history. In 1883, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Civil Rights Act of 1875 was unconstitutional. In 1970, Anwar Sadat becomes president of Egypt. And in 1991, Clarence Thomas becomes the second African-American under the U.S. Supreme Court. All right, folks, every Thursday we deal with some of these crazy, unbelievable, wild stories out here. And joining me right now to break these stories down, singer and songwriter Monifa. Of course, you've seen her on TV One, on our reality show here. One of them divas. She a diva. And we got another diva, WE TV correspondent, Mr. Ray. All right, folks, a Bakersfield, California man couldn't wait for the liquor store to open up, so he crashed into it with his SUV. What did he grab? A $5 case of beer. His stunt resulted in thousands of dollars worth of damage and his arrest. Okay, really? Just one case?
All that for one case of beer.
One case of beer. My Lord.
That must have been some good beer.
It had to be some.
That must be. He might as well have stole the money because he's right. Still going to get the same amount of time, right? Like, really?
I mean, he told the whole joint up. So, I mean, all right. That's how you want to roll. Okay, guys. And some whitish news also to do with beer. A New Hampshire couple has won the 16th annual North American Wife Carrying Championship held in Newry, Maine on Saturday. Sam Brakely and Steph Reihart completed the course in just over an hour. The prize, Steph's weight in beer and five times her weight in cash. Ooh. The couple will go on to the World Championships held in Finland in July. I'm sorry. Ain't nobody black came up with this idea.
That looked like a 69 to me.
Oh, right.
You know they come up with different ways to make things appropriate.
Acceptable.
My mom ain't gonna bend over and let my daddy carry her upside down backwards through some water.
Not at all. But did you see the falls though? That was crazy.
Fell on her head.
It was bananas. This is dangerous. I mean,
he's carrying her upside down. I know she dizzy as hell.
She has to be heavy.
Yes, it doesn't look safe. It looks weird. But it looks fun. I mean, they're strong.
Black folks ain't competing in that.
I don't think you're gonna see any us there.
No. Not a woman.
Hold up, y'all. Hey, Shelly, show that video again. I don't see nobody black even watching it.
We're not gonna stand outside and watch you pick your wife up upside
that
down.
For what?
Black women wear a slip, first of all.
And then our wigs or other things might fall off.
Exactly. Wig fall out, lace front fall off.
We got time.
Your cheek.
Right. Exactly. And you know you got some sisters. You know they got their cell phone. They got their cell phone and their money in their bra. And so you came upside down. It's gonna fall out.
Right.
Yes, it is. But they fell twice. Bless their hearts.
Nah, we would have divorced right there. Look at that.
Look at this guy.
Lord, all right. Okay, all right. I'm just saying.
Not for it. Not here for it.
All right. No way in hell I'm going to be picking up Jackie, carrying her around. Just to,
Would you let your boo pick you up like that and carry you around?
Absolutely not.
Ain't going to happen. All right, okay.
And I dang on show her.
Right, may pick that down. Ain't gonna happen. All right, a Manhattan woman has earned the title of the most ignorant and worst aunt ever. Let me tell y'all what this crazy. See, I'm about to say something right now, y'all. But I don't know if I can say that word on television. Okay, y'all, this woman sued her 12-year-old nephew for $127,000 after a hug. Y'all, Jennifer Connell alleges she broke her wrist in 2011 when she fell after her then 8-year-old nephew excitedly hugged her while exclaiming, "Auntie Jen, I love you." Connelly claims the injury has severely impacted her life. She said, quote, "I was at a party recently and it was difficult to hold my hors d'oeuvre plate."
You know,
okay,
what?
Let me be as clear as possible. This is when I need hashtag team whip that ass.
Yes.
I really,
to show up at her house.
She's definitely petty. She's the sibling who ain't got no job, don't have no money. She know that nephew, mama, her sister, or her brother got some coins, and she wants some money because they won't let her borrow none.
Now
she's going to try to sue the nephew. So they know the mama got to give it up.
Well, now, I read the article. The mother died. This was about getting insurance. She's had to have two surgeries. The insurance company forced her to sue, you know, to sue her nephew. I think it was a
12-year-old nephew.
Yes, because his mother's dead. She was trying to go for the homeowner's insurance to pay for the injuries. I think it's a little blown out of proportion. I think it's a little, you know, she's just trying to get her medical bills paid. Mm-hmm. I think that she might be.
Oh, no, but I mean, you can't sue your 12-year-old nephew.
You can't sue your 12-year-old nephew.
Well, the mother's is deceased. The mother's deceased, and she's trying to get the homeowner's insurance to pay for her surgery.
Okay, but here's the deal.
She might not be a little weird.
No, that's very awkward. Hell no. Look, I got 9 nieces and 4 nephews, and when they run up to you at that age, damn it, brace yourself.
Listen.
Bend your knees and brace yourself for the hug. You can't have an 8-year-old knock you over.
No.
I agree. But
I'm not suing my nephew. Samantha, I'm not suing Deuce. I'm just telling you now. He knocks me over because he runs.
No, no.
I ain't going to sue my sister because my nephew knocked me over.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you know, you gotta think about quality of life and, you know, trying to, you know,
work and stuff plate,
like that.
Though.
That was dumb. I would have never said that. That was like her lawyer should have punched her in the face. Like, that was dumb. It, like, to say that out loud, like in the public, on a quote.
Then you would have really got sued there for punching her. Then she would have got her money.
Exactly. But,
All right.
But it's always two sides to it. There's always more to the story.
Right, she gonna get punched in the gut next time the 12-year-old run up to her for a hug. All right, folks, I'll be back on News 1 Now in just a moment.
Hello, I'm Bishop T.D. Jakes, and you're watching News 1 Now with Roland Martin on TV 1. I'm excited about my new book, Destiny. I encourage you to get a copy today and secure your future.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, we're back with Monifa and Mr. Ray for What the Hell Thursday. All right, folks, divorce can get ugly. Just ask Sheriff Fat Khan, who has been living on the front lawn of his $1 million Lakeview, Texas home since his wife kicked him out in March. Not only did she lock him out and freeze his access to their money, but she posted a sign for sympathetic neighbors that reads, "If you want to feed him, take him to your house. If you want to, you can keep him at your house. Thanks for your sympathy, but do not bring anything on this property." This, of course, could be a strong case of karma, as the couple's son alleges his father has been mentally and physically abusive to his mother for years.
Listen, you're not going to make me sleep on my front yard, and it's $1 million home. He could have went and bought him a tent at least, but you're not going to lock me out of my own house. I can tell you that right now.
Well, clearly.
She would have had an insurance claim then, because I'd have set that whole house on fire.
I don't understand this. I don't understand this one. Clearly,
He's not black.
But he's not right in the mentals. Something's not clicking.
He's taunting her. He's like, "Oh, you want to change the locks? I'm going to sleep right here."
He said, "I could go to a friend's house.
Yes.
I could go. I have somewhere to go, but I'm not. I'm going to annoy the mess out of her and be on his lawn."
He wants her to snap.
Yes.
So then he can sue her.
Exactly.
See? They all work together.
Let me tell y'all something, okay? Straight up, I would get me an old school stereo system.
A what?
And I had that sucker on the front lawn under a tent
like
and
this.
And man, she'll be hearing Tupac all night.
No, you gotta get a little more ratchet in that role. You gotta play Future all night. You gotta play Future.
Okay.
Just let it throw some commas on all night.
I'm gonna play Juicy J all
Juicy
night.
Juicy J.
And do it on Sunday when she invite her mom and her girlfriends over for Sunday brunch.
Exactly.
Play the all extra ratchet, nasty music then.
But
play some Too Short.
It's always, I mean, there's always a reason for something. It's crazy.
All right, let me go to the next one here. Calling the police isn't an odd thing to do unless you're high and calling the cops on yourself. That's exactly what a 22-year-old Youngstown, Ohio man did after smoking weed. He told 911 he had gotten too high. The police found him curled up in the fetal position, surrounded by Doritos, chips, Ahoy cookies, goldfish crackers, and other snacks. Okay, that's
Diet
it right there.
The
hey, yo, say what, y'all? I'm too high.
This is funny.
That's
now,
crazy.
This is funny. He had to be some kind of feeling crazy. He had to be some kind of
the court case.
Like,
gone.
Listen, something ain't right. I did too much. Like, that's some real talk. Like, I know people that have done that.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
You lying.
Yeah,
you lying.
You a lie, the truth ain't it?
You lying.
Oh,
but you're
goodness.
The but how you gonna have cheap? I mean, you got the munchies bad when you got Doritos, Chips Ahoy cookies,
that
and
even
goldfish.
Right.
No, yeah, well,
that's a lot of different tastes in one time.
You never inhaled. Never.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a Christian.
What
all right,
mean?
Folks. All right, folks. But thanks a bunch, Mr. Ray and Monifa. Folks, don't forget
thank
Monifa.
You,
she's performing at the Blues Alley tonight at 8 p.m. So be sure to go check her out again tonight at 8 p.m. at Blues Alley. All right, folks. Tomorrow on News One Now, producer, actor Devon Franklin talks his new film, Woodlawn. And the next part of my Joy Ann Reid interview looks at the future of black elected officials. All right, folks. You can follow me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. I got to go. I got to go to our Inactive One office here in New York. One word, holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.